You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast, episode 16.
Hi, it's Jo here. And just before we get onto the show, I want to let you know that the doors to my Mojo membership are now open, a place where you get to hunt down your mojo and keep it so that you can earn more, achieve more and live more. Head over to my Instagram profile, jobritton.mojo, and check out the Mojo membership link in my bio. And now on to the main part of the show. You're listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with me, your host, Jo Britton. Your mojo is your energy, your enthusiasm and your motivation, so that you've got the ability to get results for your personal and professional life without freaking out and burning out. Tune in for practical advice on how to find your mojo and keep it. Welcome back to another episode of Mojo Matters. By now, if you're a regular listener to the show, you'll know that I'm absolutely passionate about bringing you inspiration and motivation so that you can bring more mojo to your life. Because quite frankly, we really need our mojo right now. And you'll also know that I'm a huge fan of learning from so many disciplines, different walks of life, and perspectives to get that mojo filling inspiration from people's stories, context, and the lens through which they see the world. So on today's show, I can't tell you how excited I am to be talking to the incredible Farah Nanji, an entrepreneur, journalist, DJ, musician, and TEDx speaker, committed to driving change around the world through the fusion of the music and automotive industries. She says music is her yin and racing is her yang. She's heavily inspired by her ethnic roots from the Indian and African subcontinents and has been described by DJ Mag as a fast rising, mega talented star. She also runs Regents Racing, a company that explores how Formula One can transform performance for senior leaders, and which has worked with some of the biggest brands around the world, from the World Economic Forum to Aston Martin. Farah is passionate about driving change around the world through her own leadership and humanitarian initiatives, whilst challenging the status quo. What's also really remarkable about Farah is that she was diagnosed with dyspraxia in her teenage years, a developmental coordination disorder that affects about 5% of the world's population. But she turned this perceived weakness into a gift of innovation and entrepreneurship, creating her own unique processes to operate in two industries that rely heavily on motor coordination, music and motorsport, something she's discussed in detail at a TED talk last year. And her Mission Makers podcast talks to industry leaders from the world of music, motorsport and business, uncovering the mindset and misconceptions that lead to their success. Wow. You're just incredible, Farah. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. That was definitely quite the introduction. I'm really excited to be here and can't wait to have a really great chat with you.
Great. So let's just start by exploring what dyspraxia is and how it affects you and how on earth really you came to fuse this really unusual combination of music and motorsport and in industries that really rely heavily on motor coordination.
Yeah, definitely. So I got diagnosed around the age of 15, and it was like kind of just before I was about to start my GCSEs, and I was in this very high pressurized school, and the teachers couldn't quite understand why I was really good at certain, especially the expressive subjects like history, English, RS. But then when it came to like maths and science, there was like this huge disparity and it was like well below average. And they kind of initially thought really, actually not just initially, but for a long time, they treated me like I was just maybe being a rebel, didn't want to like succeed in my exams and things. So they suggested that, you know, you could probably do some extra time just to like kind of help you out, you know, why don't you see if you can, you know, get anything. So like they referred me to an educational psychologist, who, you know, who basically after a day of testing kind of came to the conclusion that I had this motor coordination delay, which was quite obviously quite shocking because I didn't know what I was going in for, like in that sense. And, you know, came out on the other end with this. And really, it took me really about 15 years to actually understand how much I'd actually really affected my life on a day-to-day basis. Because when there are things that you think you're bad at, like just maybe you're not so good at sports, like, you know, catching a ball or like, you know, those types of things, or you're just, you know, maths isn't your subject and things like that. And you just think, you just accept it and you don't really question why, what's underneath the hood. But then I kind of realized why. And yeah, I just, it changed my life. But I think in the teenage years, I didn't go deep into understanding just how much of an impact it had on me. And by that point, I was already in music and motorsport in different ways. And they all started, you know, not really as a career, like it wasn't, you know, something I went off to go out and become, but it was just what I naturally gravitated to in childhood for many reasons. And so I'm a huge believer in that, you know, you really have to explore what you gravitate to in the early years. And I think those, whatever you gravitate to in the early years is really where your like happiness and your fulfillment truly may come from.
Great. Yeah. And so did people put limitations then on you in that? So you're talking about you're in the world of like motorsport when you were like really young, and the dyspraxia must have had some kind, did it have some kind of effect on you and how you performed in that industry, and did therefore people impose these limitations on what was possible?
Definitely. So I didn't know I had it till 15, right? So I started karting a bit late. The typical way like into motorsport is karting, and like, you know, drivers who've gone on to become F1 drivers, you know, they start really young, like the age of 5, 6, you know. So I started really late, like 13, you know. So I had about 2 years of experience kind of on the track, and to be fair, I didn't feel like there were limitations being posed upon me because I didn't know I had anything wrong, and nor did anybody else in the surroundings. And that's where, when I did get diagnosed, I felt like a bit confused, because like, I know that I naturally excelled in the sport because I was kind of getting podiums, and I was, you know, I wasn't a slow driver. Like I, you know, I understood like how to be quick. And motorsport is such a steep in learning environment that your every season, everything is a huge learning, you know, learning curve. So you're always learning, and you're always learning. What I think I struggled with was really understanding more the principles of physics. So like understanding, you know, the weight transfer or the racing lines, and how that affects the way you drive, and, you know, also the mechanics of the karts and the cars, and what, you know, what the different components were doing in a much more advanced level of like the engineering kind of side of things. But I went to the racetrack to escape my surroundings, where I was being in a way limited more holistically, because I was in this school that I was like quite heavily bullied. So I just found my freedom on the racetrack, if I'm honest. That's where, you know, I just, you don't know that many people. You're just, you put your helmet on. It's really just about you and what you want to achieve on the track. It's, you know, but then obviously when I did get diagnosed, and I had to kind of understand like maybe the reason why I wasn't, like, you know, I would reach a ceiling and then I wouldn't be able to progress past a certain point unless I did a lot of work to understand things. And that's where I think maybe the limitations would have been started to come. So just going into the more advanced leagues, you know, that progress going into the elite, that probably would have, you know, been much harder because of what, you know, just because of the default of what I have. So yeah, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So what happened then? Did you stop in that industry as a result of that, or how did you end up kind of doing what you're doing, I guess, and like fusing like music? So tell us a bit more about that, and how did you fuse these things together?
Definitely. So music also came actually a bit younger, was around the age of seven, because it was just very unfortunate. Just both the schools I went to, I just faced a lot of bullying because I was a tomboy. I was really introverted. I kind of just didn't have a lot of confidence, and I was different as well. At the school that I went to, you know, there wasn't really that many coloured people in the schools. So, you know, it was very cliquey, and you know, I just kind of was different. And so I found my healing also through music, and I didn't realize it then, but I do obviously now, looking back. You know, age of seven, I was like, you know, signed up for Spanish guitar, and like I would go off to this room and I would, you know, be allowed to leave this, you know, you can go to a music lesson during class if at that age. And I just realize now, like, just how much of a deep impact that had on me, because now the music I play is like heavily inspired by the Balearic Islands, and like there's a lot of scales that I use, you know, which are gypsy scales, flamenco scales, Arab scales, you know, these are definitely coming from there. What was this? Oh, and how did I kind of get to where I am today in that sense with motorsport as well? So yeah, when I was 15 and I got the diagnosis, like, because it was very, very, you know, it wasn't very long to go before GCSEs, the pressure was obviously like completely on academics, you know, and particularly in that school where like everyone there is like, they want to get into Oxford and Cambridge, it's like the be all and end all of their life. And I was like, oh, like how am I just going to get like a B, you know, like I need to get the minimum like to move forward. And so I had to kind of hang up my racing shoes for a bit, you know, in those years, as I then went on to do A levels and everything. But then I think it was in my gap year that I had a time to like really take a step back and like process a few things, and also think now about the next steps, because obviously you're then preparing to go to university, you're thinking about your life, your career, what do you want to do? And I had the opportunity to intern for Gumball 3000. I won a competition on Facebook, and it changed my life. I was just there for literally a week, but that 1 week, what I was exposed to in terms of understanding how motorsport is far beyond just, you know, just on the track racing, there's so much around it. On a more lifestyle, on a more hospitality side of things, that it really inspired me to then start my own kind of ideas within the motorsport industry, and experiences. Because I think I'm the type of person that like is very sensorial, and I really pay attention, like I love like the five more than the five senses. So for me, like going into events was quite a natural, you know, progression, and being a DJ as well. You know, I'm a bit of an OCD when it comes to an environment and really making it as magical as possible. And I just saw these ways that motorsport could really do that. And I just had the amazing opportunity in the university I was in to really bring that to life, because we had a community of students that were really passionate about driving, and some of them were actually serious race car drivers. Like some of these guys, you know, they were entering Dakar and debuting at fourth place in their first debut of Dakar. Some of them were like racing professionally for Red Bull, for Lamborghini, and I had the amazing opportunity to really almost like learn so much of what I didn't get to that I missed out on, you know, in my earlier years, and create with them a society where, you know, we would have these motorsport events. They could be a track day, they could be a road trip, but really create something special and different. So, and particularly here being in the UK, which is such a place filled with like, you know, heritage for the mm-hmm. for the motorsport and automotive worlds, you know, we would do crazy things like, you know, kind of go blind driving with Land Rover and you know, kind of develop skills. Because what I really saw from it was that motorsports became an incredible proving ground and a training ground to develop skill sets that have heavy, like, you know, kind of provided me with a mental discipline to succeed in other areas of life. And looking at my friends and my colleagues now who were racing in the earlier years, they've gone on to become so successful because of that discipline, because racing is a very mental sport as well. It's very mentally driven. And many sports are. So I think that that understanding that can have a great impact on your life.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. I love it. So, okay. So you've been doing that. And then obviously the dreaded COVID has hit. And I guess you're in two industries that are very much event-based, in person, and I'm guessing at the moment you're not able to do that, are you? What's happened in terms of what you're doing at the moment then?
Yeah, it's heartbreaking, isn't it? You know, for music, it's one of the first industries that was, you know, that closed down, and no, I don't think that we'll be the first to come back. We're probably going to be one of the last. You know, Glastonbury was announced recently that, you know, they've cancelled their festival for this year. I mean, it's just awful. In terms of music, I've kind of switched gears a little bit, and, you know, just kind of made it a time to recover maybe a little bit from touring, and actually just go deeper into my productions, which I think is what a lot of musicians are doing. But of course everyone's itching to get back, so we just have to wait it out and just kind of, like, you know, do other things, as it were, but not take the focus away either. So just, like, keep the musical identity and, like, keep playing music and discovering sounds, but, you know, you've got to switch to something else to survive at this point. So yeah, I'd been then the motorsport as well, like, for sure the events with Regents Racing had to come to a pause. But luckily, we'd been also developing a much deeper side of the business that kind of goes into taking some of these learnings and transporting them into a corporate environment, and bringing these learnings from Formula One and other motorsports to a corporate setting. So it's really given me the chance to go really deep within my startup and develop the curriculum, the content, the people involved. And we're just hoping that by spring, you know, we can start delivering, but also be ready to create a hybrid model, you know, because obviously it won't just be realistic that everything will be face to face. So that's been there. And then, of course, as you mentioned, the podcast as well, like, that, to be honest, has been, I think, 60-70% of what I've been doing during lockdown. It's a lot of work, so I'm sure you definitely agree. It's way more than just this recording is, like, probably the easiest part of it, you know, the quickest part of it. That, but then all the publishing, all the designing, all of the, you know, the outreach is, like, it's a huge operation. So it took 10 months really to get my podcast off the ground. And now preparing to go into season two, and so much learning as well coming from that, and how we can be better for next season and everything. So yeah, that's kind of been what's keeping me quite busy at the moment.
Amazing. And so it sounds like, really, to kind of do, I hate the word pivot, but innovate or adapt, or, you know, and thrive in the environment that we're in that is really heavy for a lot of people. It feels like mindset is massively important in your ability to regulate and to overcome setbacks and bounce back. And I know that is quite a theme on your podcast as well, isn't it? Where you've been uncovering the mindset and misconceptions of success with the people that you've been talking to, and I guess yourself. So just tell us a little bit about, like, for you, what's mindset all about, and what have you discovered talking to other people from different disciplines around mindset and how it's helping them?
It's a great question. I think mindset is really about abundance and like kind of having that approach holistically towards, you know, overcoming limits, and that, you know, that everything that we need is within us, and really tapping much deeper into who we are to achieve the results that we want. You know, the world and people can put many constraints on you, but if you have a very good understanding of who you are at the core, you'll flow through very, very effortlessly. And I think that's what I've definitely observed from a lot of the guests that have been on my show. Like, they've all faced, you know, a huge amount of adversity from their from their environments. But the inner belief and the inner strength and the consistency and the perseverance, I think, are the key things that allowed them to move forward. And obviously also recognizing that you need to also be very conscious about the environment you build around you. So, you know, I think a lot of the guests as well are very conscious about, you know, just having no toxicity, recognizing what that is, not being that themselves, and just walking away from it and creating an environment where it's just happy, you know. And as we know, like, life is so short, so you want to live that to the fullest. And I think that's really what mindset is to me about, I think, those types of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a theme actually that has come up with many of my guests over the series of this podcast as well. And certainly it's really helped me, this bit that you particularly you talked about. It's that kind of surrounding yourself with people with the right energy and with that kind of forward thinking, you know, things are possible. There may be problems that we all face and stuff in the environment, but our ability maybe to get support, community, to move forward and to think with a different perspective, I think definitely has helped me during the last, gosh, we're getting on for 12 months of this, aren't we? You know, the last at least 10 months being part of that community. So that's really interesting that you've been also speaking to other people that inverted commas successful, because I guess we've all got our own definition of what success is. And how about for you in terms of your own mindset? What are the sorts of things or strategies or types of things that you do to help you keep moving forward in this environment?
100%. I think like I like to set a lot of goals. Well, not a lot, but I like to set goals and I like to keep reviewing them constantly, and that kind of goes back to motorsport as well, where it's a constant feedback loop. So I'm always reviewing performance, whether it's in the teams I'm working with or the projects that I'm bringing to life, like just finding performance gaps, you know, because I think that's what's over time is where the high performance you know, it starts to transpire, and the consistency, and also having the time to like be quite non-negotiable, to have time for yourself. So we can all get very trapped into working to the ground, but you know, I think you need to set that time up for yourself at some point during the day, whether it's in the morning, in the middle, whatever it is, just for yourself to meditate, to go out and get a walk, get fresh air, get take in nature. Like nature is just so such a big part of my equation for sure. That's definitely one of the ways. I do a lot of Qigong at home, a bit of yoga. Right now, obviously, we can't go to the gym. We can't do all those things, but you just have to get creative within your environment and just kind of like do it, because you just can't take your eye off the ball on that, I think. And I've noticed myself, you know, it's very easy to take the eye off the game and not do those things. But then you realize, you know, how much pain you inflict on yourself physically and mentally as well. You don't realize that. You're stifling a bit of your own potential by not looking after yourself and being conscious about what you eat, you know, all the things that are just, you know, we hear about it everywhere, but they it's for a reason, right? You know?
Yeah, absolutely that. And it's so interesting that you say that as well, because like especially the last couple of weeks, coaching clients that I have that have been really struggling, you know, because there's the lockdown, the weather's terrible, it's kind of dark, there's that homeschooling the kids, there's a lot of pressures like externally in the environment affecting us, and people feeling very dysregulated and feeling very challenged with the way that they're coping or feeling they're not coping with the world. And when you actually talk to them, it's some of the things that they were used to doing or have been doing, like the things you've been talking about, meditation, you know, exercise, eating well, that they've just not been doing, that's really having an effect on them. And then when I talk to them about it and then we catch up again, it's like, do you know what, I feel really so much better, so I've got back into my exercise routine, even though I'm walking around the table in the house, you know, those sorts of things. So absolutely love what you've said there. Okay, finally, if there's somebody out there right now who's got a dream to do something but feel like they've got something that's holding them back, or maybe they've heard people tell them that they can't do something, perhaps they've got a condition, what kind of advice might you give them just to help them?
I think everything within us is everything, yeah, within us is within us. You know, you can't put any limits on what you can achieve, because there's been, you know, many people in the world who've gone and achieved incredible things despite all the conditions. So I think it's, you know, to have the mindset of winning and not giving up, going against it, against all the odds. You know, one day the people that criticized you, one day those people will fade away into the distance and they'll mean nothing, because at the end of the day, it's only you who has to live with yourself. That's it. So you can't, don't need to worry about all the other people that you're not, you know, fulfilling, because it's not really them you need to fulfill. You need to fulfill yourself first. if you're not happy at work, if you're not happy in a relationship, if you're not happy in, you know, in whatever it is, you know, just go out and do something about it, because it's too short to like to leave here feeling unfulfilled. Like, what's the point, you know? And then go out, and apart from that, then go out and be very, very determined and disciplined to do what you need to do to succeed. So, you know, it's one thing having a dream, having a goal and not being sure, but then it's another being ready to roll up your sleeves and do the hard work, because it's not going to fall on your lap. You know, and nothing happens overnight. It may look like it does, but there's a lot of work that, and hard work that goes behind something. So to having talent as well isn't just enough. You have to do something more than just the talent within it. So hopefully that will be, hopefully that will resonate and, you know, provide people with maybe the way I approach it as well. Because I look back as well and I, you know, like those people that were bullying me and all that, like they don't mean anything to me anymore, you know. And actually, once they've seen me become successful, it's funny because they've reached out to me like, you know, trying to be all nice. And it's just like, you know, come on, what do you, you know, I'm not going to forget, you know. But I also don't need many people. I know loads of people, but I don't need many as my close friends, you know, because I think, you know, it's a very precious thing, energy, and who you give it to and who you choose to give it to. And unfortunately, a lot of people won't be happy, truly, if you're aware of that, you know, and just kind of head down and just do what you do. And hopefully what you're doing is for the better of the world as well. Because I think we should always try and leave this world in a better way than when we found it. And obviously, we're at a very, you know, dangerous time for our existence at the moment as a species and as a planet. So, you know, that is really, really important that we have to change that, each of us individually.
Oh, you said that so beautifully. Thank you so much. You're absolutely awesome. It's been brilliant to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
If people want to reach out and find you, where can they connect with you?
Yeah, definitely. So I'm all over on socials, Instagram at dj.n1nja, and Mission Makers as well on iTunes, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcasts. So those would kind of be, and then also if you want to listen to the music, which obviously the main thing is as well, is to kind of go on SoundCloud. DJ-Ninja is my URL thing on SoundCloud.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. It's been amazing to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Mojo Matters podcast with Jo Britton. Tune in again for more practical advice on how to find your mojo and how to keep it.